This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. You know, it's hard to find inspiration in reports from the culture wars, stories of Christians burning the Quran, Hollywood celebrities spouting anti-Semitic rhetoric, and protesters picketing soldiers' funerals make most of us want to turn away. But it was that sort of news that turned David Lamott into a man with a mission. He's a musician, and he served as North Carolina Council of Churches consultant for peace, wanted to find a way to confront bigotry in song. So David decided to put on a show. Tonight, he and a host of other musicians and poets present the Abraham Jam at Duke University's Page Auditorium. It's going to feature three musicians, each from a different Abrahamic faith. David Lamott joins me in the studio. He's a Christian. Also with us, Daoud Warrensby is a Muslim, and Dan Nichols is Jewish. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
We could do the joke, Muslim, a Jew, and a Christian, walk onto a bandstand, and they jam. David, it's your idea. Tell us when this first occurred to you.
It was really in response to that Quran burning incident that the idea first sparked. We were talking at the council about how to respond to that. And, you know, after you've issued the press release condemning people for condemning people and such, we kind of thought, okay, what do we do now? That's really, can we go a little farther than that? And in trying to look at that, we realized two things. One is that if you want to fight bigotry, the best way to do that is actually not by opposing it, but by building community that's strong enough to withstand it. And the second thing that occurred to us is that if you really want to build a movement, the people you go to are students. And so we thought, what can we do to bring students together that'll kind of demythologize the other a little bit? And how can we be together and build some community and start having relationships? Because it's harder to hate people that you know than it is to hate people that you imagine.
And that's the community part of it. So tell us about the Abraham part, the Abrahamic tradition that you bring together on stage.
Well, you know, there are two pieces to that, I guess. One is that, you know, we do have some kinship here. You know, we are an extended family. And in saying that the three faiths are family, I'm not talking about an idealized imaginary family. I'm talking about a real family. Yeah. I have a pretty hard time with my brother in real life. So, you know, life is complicated, but it changes things when you're family. And I think it's good to acknowledge that and celebrate it. And so that's kind of where we were going with that. And I also was seeing a lot of the tension that was in the headlines as between these three faiths.
And yeah, so, and it underscores the fact that Abraham is the patriarch of these three religions. So it does go back that far, and it does have a common root, a common heritage.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Dan, tell us about how you found out about this and what your reaction was.
For me, David called out of the blue and said, "I've been thinking about you, and I would love you to be a part of this experience." And that began a conversation of, well, how did you find out about me? I live and work in a very small circle, and it feels that way to me. And was totally blown away that Dave called and said, "I want you to be part of this."
Well, I think what he did was Google Jewish singer-songwriters. Dylan was busy, and you answered the phone. Possibly how that worked out.
I'm so glad I took that call. Who was third on the list?
I think you were number two. Daoud, you traveled all the way from Pakistan by way of Canada to be here for this show. What did David say to you to persuade you to be here?
Same scenario, you know.
Dylan couldn't make it.
Cat Stevens.
Yusuf Islam was you know, his flight was turned away. So same situation. You know, I just got an email from David, and you know, I just was so excited about the opportunity. I think like what Dan was saying, a lot of times faith communities try to claim an artist, you know, because they may find out, you know, well, you worship this way or you may believe this. And so they can want to claim you as their own. And as a result of that, you often end up as an artist, you know, with a certain spiritual conviction, you end up being, you know, in a bubble a lot of times where you're kind of going around validating a community's perspective of their interpretation, as opposed to just being an artist who's on the road to trying to discover, you know, where your journey is taking you. And so the opportunity to kind of get out of that bubble sometimes and to say, look, it's not about the validation of a specific community. It's about bringing humanity and people together. This is a great way to do it. And because we share that same, you know, history, we share that same family link, we share that same passion for music and social justice, I feel more comfortable here actually often than suffocating in the bubble that I often get put into.
The three of you have never played together before. Is that true?
We've never actually met until about yesterday.
Wow.
Yeah. Dan and I just met and in the lobby. And
DeWood, you met here in the green room?
Yes. And DeWood and I go back way back to yesterday at the airport.
How's it going so far? You guys getting along? Well, you're here. That's good.
Well, I will tell you that meeting them and the time we had in the green room waiting to come speak with you today made me feel like, how have I been living 42 years and not met David and DeWood? Mm. I mean, there's so much overlap, I can just tell, in our spirits and in our values.
Well, let's get a sense of some of the music, and I know you're going to try to talk about some of these things. David, let's listen to a bit of the song Power of Pride from your new album, Change.
September came with smoke and flame, no one could believe the scene was real, no. Now by our own hands, the children of foreign lands will know the way we feel. Look at all these bitter tears. What are we supposed to do with all this history and the power of pride?
David Lamott, when did you write that song?
I wrote it, I guess it must have been about 2003 or so. I was actually at another songwriter's concert, who's a friend of Dan's, it turns out, a guy named Billy Jonas, and he's a close friend of mine, and he played a song and introduced it by saying, you know, I guess every songwriter has a 9/11 song, and this is mine. And I thought, well, that's funny, I don't actually have a 9/11 song, and if I did, what would I want to say? And I was thinking, you know, what I would really want to say, I want to address the cycles of violence and how violence tends to lead to violence, and we need to escape that. And so I was thinking about that on my way home from the concert and saw a bumper sticker on a car right in front of me that said Power of Pride. Mm. And I thought, isn't that a problematic phrase, the power of pride? What is the power mm-hmm. of pride, and shouldn't we be warned against that power?
Yeah.
Well, it's the myth of redemptive violence that is now embedded in some kind of religious practice that the way to bring order to chaos has been through violence, and that's okay because order is the most important thing. That's what humans – we come to believe this. It's embedded in some religious practice, though I want to get your take on this, whether or not it's truly at the root of these religions, because if – you see those bumper stickers and you see some of the way at sporting events violence is glorified. We do the same thing over and over. It's Popeye and Brutus, you know. It's like, will Popeye ever figure out that he needs to take the spinach first? And does Brutus ever learn that he's not going to get to rape the girl? And we repeat the same cycle over and over, same bumper stickers, same kind of salute. But how do you sort that out? The quasi-religious glorification of violence that appears to be embedded in each of our religions, and it shouldn't be. Spiritually, it's the mistake that we make. Is it? Is the myth of redemptive violence what we're struggling with, and the thing that the fact that we're glorifying something that we need to root out of our culture?
I mean, I will go back to what Dave was saying about pride. I think that's really, you know, when it goes back to that arrogance and the self-righteousness of thinking that your interpretation of any particular scripture is the truth. I mean, that's a very dangerous statement to make. I mean, I know that a conviction and integrity in how we live our lives and what we deem as truth for ourselves is very important, and I would never mean to diminish that and say, oh, we're all the same, and we're all, you know, we've all got different approaches. But it's the self-righteousness and the pride that goes along with those interpretations that we have to be very careful of, because if we don't get to the core of that, then we will constantly be drawing these lines, you know, and drawing these links and justifying, you know, right, the behaviors that we have in order to establish that what we claim as the ultimate order to things, as you were saying.
Let's listen to a little piece of your music, Daoud. Similar issues of cosmic justice. I want to listen to a clip of the song "The Truth That Lies Inside" from your album "Outseeing the Fields."
Would you call me a hypocrite? Call me a liar? Would you curse out my name? Would you damn me to fire? Would you know what to say, or would you just walk away, afraid of me I've tried to hide? Would to closely resemble the truth of you that lies inside?
A little bit of The Truth That Lies Inside from Dawood Warnsby's album Out Seeing the Fields. What was your inspiration for that song?
That was inspired initially by a conversation I had with a young man who wanted to go for coffee and talk about some issues in his life at the time. And as I heard him talk and as he shared with me some of the struggles he was having and the judgments he was placing upon himself, I was hearing numerous other conversations I'd have with numerous other young people of the same direction, where a lot of young people get so overwhelmed by the expectations of a community or of a dogma or of a theology that they begin to feel so hopeless and depression. I mean, is one of the most common things amongst young people, you know, in our world today, is because of this feeling that I'll never be able to keep up with the expectations upon me. And as I started writing this song to kind of address that, I realized there was a lot of that within me as well, this idea that we care so much more about the community's expectations of what we should be or the history or the tradition of what we're supposed to be as a Christian or a Muslim or a Jew, instead of remembering that it's not about the institutions, it's about our individual relationship with that force, that being that brought us all into his existence, you know, into this existence. Mm-hmm. And the song is kind of about that, trying to tap into that honesty of self, that we can be comfortable in our own skins and with our own struggles, you know.
Dan, you and your band 18 have been hailed as one of the most popular acts in contemporary Jewish music, and you sing in Hebrew and English, sometimes switching between the two. We're going to play a bit of your song Hoshea and for our non-Hebrew speaking listeners, maybe you can tell us what this is about, what it means.
Sure. It's an excerpt from Psalm 28, and the Hebrew we're singing means save your people, bless your heritage, tend them and exalt them forever.
An excerpt from Hoshea for and Dan, when you wrote that song, it was Psalm 28, you said. Mm. The Psalms go back millennia. They are written by a particular people at a particular time, and yet they wouldn't have survived that long if they didn't have some kind of universal message.
What fascinates me about that excerpt is it's not clear to me who's speaking this and who's receiving this. And I think one of the things that inspires me to write Jewish music is to understand my own Jewish path through text and through prayer. And I'm often asking myself questions. What does that mean? What does that mean? And this confused me a little bit. And I liked that energy and then spent time with it. And the song came.
Do you write, you know, you talked about, Dawood talked about working within a certain group and wanting to get out of that bubble a little bit. Clearly your audience is, you're writing for a Jewish audience. Is it something you seek to do? You want to get out and get a larger audience as well?
I don't know if larger is an interest to me as more connected, a sense of that we understand each other. And that's one of the reasons I'm so thrilled, delighted, truly honored to be a part of this program with Dawood and David tonight is, my band members, Mark Nathan Mark Nemec and Nathan Meckel, aren't Jewish, and yet they reside and make this Jewish music with me, and they have been encouraging me for years now to look beyond the Jewish world and how I make music and for whom I make that music, with whom. So this opportunity to be with Dawood tonight and with David and to truly share in making beautiful music together. It's a big deal to me, and I'm most inspired by what's going to happen tomorrow, and I mean literally and figuratively. What happens tomorrow after this music rolls out into the universe, after we've done this and shared this experience? What kind of conversations are we going to have? What can we do to replicate this and make this continue to roll out
Well, David, what's going to happen on stage? Are you going to play together? You haven't played together before?
This is
what happens.
Part of the joy of this event is we have no idea. It might be this slow motion train wreck that unfolds for 2 hours. It could be incredible. No, I don't think so.
It's in God's hands now.
Yeah, that, apparently so. No, in all honesty, I think it's going to be pretty magical. But we intended, we did this differently, rather, than this is often done. Rather than doing separate sets and trading sets of music, we're going to be trading songs. We're going to be on stage together the whole night, which leaves the opportunity for spontaneous collaborations. We can hop in with each other on harmonies or a lead or a bit of drum here and there. And you know, we've all been at this a long time, and it's a joy to work with really professional guys like this. So what you learn when you've been at it a long time is when not to play. And that's good. So I'm not scared about that, in all honesty, all jokes aside. But I think it's going to be beautiful to see what unfolds. There's a collaboration here that, you know, this has never happened before, and it may never happen again. It's going to be a pretty special moment.
Sounds like a great show. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
My guest musicians, David Lamott, Daoud Warnsby, and Dan Nichols. The Abraham Jam begins tonight, 7:30 at Duke University's Page Auditorium. For more information about that event, go to abrahamjam.com. Thanks for listening to our show. You can go to our website, stateofthings.org, where you will find out information about lots of stuff, including our visit to Greensboro tomorrow, the 17th, going to be broadcasting live from the Upstage Cabaret at the Triad Stage. And we're going to present a story slam. You can be in the competition. We could put your name in a hat. You could be called to read a story, tell a story as part of the Monty, but you can't do it if you're not in the audience. So join us if you want to be there tomorrow in Greensboro. The theme is Home for the Holidays. You can send us an email, RSVP at WUNC.org, if you want to join us tomorrow. Thanks so much. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacia.